This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Beautiful day here in Hawaii. Hey, listen, there's, this old subject we talk about that you hear on the way into work at the station here today. They talked about the trust that African Americans have and whites have and with the police departments and all. And again, apparently, we can't rid ourselves of this this subject. And I guess the reason is it's part of our lives. It makes up our lives. It influences everything about us and around us on a daily basis. And staying, because we are talking about various things, and sometimes we need to address the real issues. And in doing so, it's rather sensitive. And so what I decided to do in the last couple of months, I want to, on each one of these shows, to dedicate some sensibility about this whole subject. And I hope that you join with me and understand it's not someone speaking from a position of sensitive, thin skin, because I believe that the American dream is had by all. And we all have that dream. Can it be afforded to all of us? Realistically, I would say it's an impossible task, because then we would have to change the name of America to Utopia. But we can strive and we can work toward getting fairness and decency for all people. And this notion that if you make a lot of money, then you are exempt from this subject and you're free of this subject, and that this subject belongs to the lower echelons of human life. And none of that is true. And as we see the police department, I found this very, very interesting. The New York Police Department trying to divert and deflect. I recall that, just as an example, that department took sticks and stuck up the anus of a African American man, and I don't ever, during my law enforcement service, I don't ever recall knowing of any agency to issue you a mop stick or broomstick to stick up someone's anus as an official weapon. So when New York, of all people, and look how they're trying to change the subject and not discuss it and blame the mayor for not supporting them. Well, there's a lot. And let me just say to you, I was offended as I grew up in law enforcement and participated at the firing ranges. And they would have, some of the guys would break out bring to the firing range of, quote, running nigger targets. And so I found myself, both in the state and federal training programs, offended and asking the question, why is it that the targets that we shoot at primarily it's a silhouette, or it's an African-American woman with an afro holding a gun to a white male figure with a briefcase? And I inquired about that and said, why? Are you concerned? Should you be concerned that you're teaching the new officers and the new recruits that this is the way it is? The real criminals out there is the African-American with the afro and what have you. Now, I don't know the psychology of that. I have no idea. But I can tell you, while standing there on the firing line, I was offended and had those questions, and deep down inside, I had to ask the question. And once you step across that line and ask your supervisors and the range master, why do you do this? So just keep in mind that there is a culture of policemen that act way outside the color of law, and to accomplish, to get their job done, they have incorporated a number of behaviors that wouldn't pass this test of when it comes to civil rights violation. And unless they own up to that, we're never going to have the trust. And you see a lot of, there's a lot of violence in the African-American communities. But then I would say there's violence in every community. And I wanted to share with you the vision and how we are viewed by others. This is before we even leave home. Because historically, and we must own up to these things, and you might find this offensive in the next 10 minutes what I'll be reading, but in order to fix the problem, if you got the victim and you have the people that are offended, then we need to take all parties and everybody need to own up to it. Black people, you don't have a right to be violent regarding anything. I mean, if a guy calls you a nigger, then violence is not going to solve that and not going to teach him anything. So we need to refrain from that. And we need to refrain from the violence projected upon ourselves within our own community. When you see a guy, brand new TV, and he has no teeth, and he's on a bicycle, and he has a brand new flat screen TV in the box, you must ask him. You have an obligation. Do you own a TV shop, or do you sell this kind of material legitimately? Or don't buy it, so you contribute to the crime. It's a reality. Drugs, you might claim that others are selling you, bringing drugs and introducing to the community, but you don't have to buy them, and you don't have to stoop to that culture and become part of that drug culture and the violence. So we, as African Americans, have to own up to our BS, too. I mean, that's the way it is, and we'll talk more about it, but, you know, and you get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the police is telling you they're arresting your 14-year-old boy who's out there, and the first thing the mother says, well, my boy's a good boy. There, you know, a lot of the African-American kids that are out there and in these situations, the first thing the parents say is they're good boys, they're good kids. Well, I was a good boy, too, but I never found myself out there in those predicaments, not finding myself sitting in a stolen car at 4:30 in the morning or 2:30 in the morning when I don't have a job or anything. So it just didn't happen. I didn't show up at home with a gold chain and bling bling and had no job, because the first thing I would be confronted with would be, where'd you get it from? And we need to go back and find the source, because you don't have a job. When your friends, we don't allow the friends to give you anything, so you have that kind of upbringing. We have an obligation in the African-American communities to own up to our BS. I mean, and it is BS. Many of us, we you know, this thing, I've even found on my direct relatives where they tell you, I raised him, that's my son, that's my child. You don't have any right to chastise my son. Well, that lends itself to bad behavior, poor citizenship, and a complete jerk, and they eventually become incarcerated. Those are the realities. But what we do know, we have to understand America in total, and not only just Americans, because there is something that has escaped us all. There's a lot of foreigners that are influencing American culture, that move here and live here, and they have not come being desensitized. They have their views and what have you. So what I want to do is read you and share with you how maybe some of this image and the way the police forces approach African Americans. And this is not the 100% cause. So don't go away thinking that I've concluded that this is the only cause. But I want to, in the coming weeks, speak to you and share with you some of the observations that I've made, life observations, and then they continue to present themselves. But this is from the book, and Old Mother Goose's Rhymes and Tales. London, Frederick, Warney and Company, and New York, right? So it was printed and published pretty, and this was a nursery rhyme. So could it be that instances such as this and practices such as these and writings and teachings that were presented to children that were not black or were African-American and would read these? And so this is Old Mother Goose's rhymes. 10 little niggers. Now, these are not my words, and these are not the words of a rapper with his pants hanging down on his butt. This is a published document. 10 little niggers. 10 little nigger boys went out to dine. One choked his little self, and then there were nine. 9 little nigger boys sat up very late. One overslept himself, and then there were 8. 8 little nigger boys traveling in Devon. One said he'd stay there, and then there were 7. 7 little nigger boys chopping up sticks. One chopped himself in half, and then there were 6. 6 little nigger boys playing with a hive. A bumblebee stung one, and then there were 5. 5 little nigger boys going in for law. One got in chancery, and then there were 4. 4 little nigger boys going out to sea. A red heron swallowed one, and then there were 3. 3 little nigger boys walking in the zoo. The big bear hugged one, and then there were 2. 10 little nigger boys. 2 little nigger boys sitting in the sun. One got frizzled up, and then there was 1. 1 little nigger boy living all alone got married. He got married, and then there were none. So, as innocent as it may seem, it wasn't 10 little human beings or 10 little cute kids or 10 little boys. It was nigger boys, and this wasn't a black author of this document or this book. And these were old Mother Goose's nursery rhyme. And if you'd like to see the actual copy of it, we've posted one on carolcox.com. And I offer that to say, not making excuses, as some of you would quickly dismiss this, but to say that, let me remind you, if we don't want children viewing sex on TV, and we don't want to see them viewing drugs, and we know that violent movies, we've come to the conclusion that they influence. So when we refer to people in degrading terms and using a term like nigger, and it's in our nursery rhymes and what have you, could that not be a contributing factor to how we are viewed just even in modern times? And did we somewhere along the way find all of us responsible for perpetuating this kind of and willing to be so overt about it and put it in books and put it in nursery rhymes, realizing that children are going to see that, and children, because it's targeted, it's written for children, not written for 30-year-olders or what have you, but as they grow up, now they see African-Americans, or at that time, wherever they were from, if they were in England, they wouldn't be African-Americans, they wouldn't, obviously, unless they came to America. But you've got to understand, people are black men, black women. So if we're teaching our children these things, and this is how we identify them, and there were other words, and we're going to share with you later, not today, but Little Black Sambo. And it's a reality. And by the way, these come from my collection. I collect the old Jim Crow because I collect these for my personal reasons, because America does not wish to talk about these issues. It is offensive, and I wouldn't want to talk about it either. But I collect these to remind myself, if nothing else, and when I get the opportunity to share with others and say, maybe the reason we have this distrust, and maybe is not that we are bad people, but it's our teaching. And when we find it in our literature, and we find it in our teachings of our children, no one that's committed to the well-being of human nature and the humanity would dismiss this as not being a factor. We wouldn't want to see books written where it advocates women being beaten in today's time, we wouldn't want to tolerate or see stories about homosexuals, lesbians, and gays. We wouldn't tolerate that because we know that it demoralizes and dehumanizes the individual that it's projected on. So I'm not begging for any understanding, and I seize this opportunity to share with you out there that let's be careful not to make excuses for anyone, to include black people, but we all must own up to it and recognize. And this thing about slavery, we don't even know what we've done. And yeah, we freed them, but you had prisons popping up in Louisiana so that they could get that free labor, incarcerating African American men to do things. So historically, the population of African Americans in prisons can be somewhat explained by the look of cheap labor. Because remember, in many old days and going back, you had these men worked and cracked rocks and worked on county roads and state roads and all of those projects. Where would you get that money from when these poor rural countries, country towns and what have you? So it's a reality. So I believe personally that the conversation, we should not shy away from the conversation of racism or discrimination or hatred. We should hit it front on and bring with us the Mother Goose nursery rhymes and explain and acknowledge that they're there because we didn't write them. So when I see this and I hear the comments that, well, you know, Rihanna is using the word nigger in her lyrics, and I'm thinking, well, gee, if you're really bothered by that, then why don't we, and I think this would be contrary to American belief, is to take these books and burn them. Wouldn't be something you'd advocate. But so instead, they still sit on our bookshelves. They're still read by many. And children learn these things. And so when they see a person of color, an African American, then are they seeing the poem? What are they seeing? So I know many of you will probably say this has little or nothing to do with anything, but I only ask that if we're worried about sex being shown on TV, if we're worried about profanity, and if the FCC regulates what you can say and how you can say it on TV, unless it's cable, then I would say we should think about incorporating these books as well, not advocating that we go and burn these books. But we learn that these things are etched indelibly in our culture, and we find that we're offended by the modern use of the term, but we quietly allow these books to still sit on our library shelves, and we're referring to people and the Little Black Sambo books and the Little Black Sambo memorabilia. And so you take that. And you take, I have a collection of Jim Crow images, whether they're salt shakers made of Angie Mammy or a black man or black woman pictured, a character's pictured with large lips and serve as servants. So these things are the foundation of America. And so, and it's not too far removed from that era when you wouldn't dare hear a black person call a black person nigger, but you'd have quite often hear whites openly calling African Americans a black nigger. So we have some serious problems. What does it have to do with police shootings? Well, if you get past the badge and the uniform and the oath, you have a human being. And God only knows where they come from. They may pass the test. They may know how to read and write, and they may know how to add and satisfy the person, or they may be hired by their uncle. But the reality is, in that uniform is a human being. And each of us can become potentially an officer. But what are we bringing to the tables? What is our emotional state? What do we do? And I go back to, unfortunately, the military is a problem in that it's about war. But I entered the Army completely thinking that the world was black and white. And because I had been told that's what it was. But then you get into the Army, and the Army forces you, because of its mission, and forces you to tolerate others, forces you. And then you learn that you don't have to be forced to tolerate people. You could do it just by interacting with them. And you learn that you dismiss a lot of the earlier prejudicial behavior, thoughts, or discriminatory elements. You just dismiss those. And you learn that, and the joy of it was, it brought many a people together. We need something to bring together. There's this riff. The riff was already there by design, because you wanted to contain these people early on. And so we were in slavery. When the freedom came, you and I know that it was never, not on an instance where everybody said, well, you know, we're wrong and for enslaving these people, and let's make good and make them whole again. That didn't happen. It was signed, and we were freed. But then we were left vulnerable and exposed to abuse by many, thousands, millions, who found that they can use these individuals as fodder to better themselves. So I think we need a complete revisit in the attack on the president for for speaking out or engaging. That is disingenuous. That is part of the trickery of the people that wish to be. If it's a bona fide complaint that the president is speaking or should not speak, but we hear in the same sentence now, the talking heads have grouped the Al Sharpton with the president, with Jesse Jackson, with the Attorney General Holder, and acting as if they are a squad of crime. You see. When in reality, they are exercising their right as citizens, as elected officials, and they have that right. They're not doing anything illegal, whether you disagree or agree. So, this thing with police shootings, and I'd ask, this is the same culture that, one, we know there's a blue line, the brotherhood, we know that. We also know that they seek to not release any records on themselves and their activities, and yet the police departments were put in place to protect the public's interest and get stability and arrest those that presented a problem to society. But that in itself, and there's a handful of them, and you take the gentleman that is heading the police force there in New York. If I were to engage with him, I would be very afraid to deal with him, because he presents himself as being, I equate him to being that of a skinhead, a modified one, leading the people. And yeah, the two officers that died there in New York should never have happened. But they dealt with that person. They cornered him, and he apparently shot himself, and so goes that. But they couldn't accept that part. They wished to politicize it. Where was the outcry with the many, many instances of men being killed, African-American men and women being killed, and their so-called investigation through the grand jury found no fault on the policeman? And so you find a civil suit ensuing by the family. We need to change that entire culture. Police records should be open. If the mayor does something, we have open files. If city employees do things, we have open files. At least we can go down and see. But this practice of putting them on administrative leave, you're not guilty You're only guilty when you're proven to be guilty. But this culture, I'm concerned that we're moving farther and farther away from the line of civility and humanity to this police state. And you be forewarned, while it's working on black people today, if it works, they'll apply it anywhere, and you don't know who's heading these police departments. You really don't know. So I offer that little tidbit. So when you hear the word nigger, I believe that it is offensive in any form, but freedom of speech here in America. But if we're going to become myopic and focus on one group of people doing it, let's ask the history of it. Let's remind ourselves. And if we dare do that, then we might be able to emerge out of that little brief visit and own up to many other things. And not saying that by owning up to it or acknowledging that it exists, that should be, you should then go back in your house and empty all your valuables and give them to the cause to make things better. No, it's just me owning up to the fact and understanding that it's like the old joke in the West that I heard, each sheep, 10,000 coyotes can't be wrong. Well, accept the fact that racism does exist in police departments. People are projected on because they are of their race. The number of African Americans that are killed, incarcerated, maimed, we all can't be that damn sensitive. It must be something to it. So instead of running and attacking the mayor, maybe you should, in New York and the other places, maybe you should own up to your faults and own up to, and not commingle the two. Those two men that died in there, it was wrong as two left shoes. There's no explanation for it. Should never be accepted. And that being said, we shouldn't also take it and try to politicize it and further impact or impede or proceed with racial practices within police departments, because you still have to own up to it. That the fact that Holden, the president, and others are asking for investigations, that's their prerogative. That's what the American system affords. So when you take issue with that, then I have to throw up my hands and ask, what are we dealing with? 524-1080 is the number if you'd like to call or have a comment or put me in my place or whatever you'd like to do. 524-1080, welcome the calls. And we're going to talk about, there's this great debate about the military leaving the islands. A portion of them are downsizing. And I'm going to be sharing with you, and this is kind of I won't call it technical, but it's for me, it's excellent reading, and it's worth to learn the history. And basically, it's about the reference to U.S. Army pipelines and operations on Nimitz Highway Corridor, Iwelei District. And I don't know if many of you know this. Down in the Honolulu Harbor, there's it's occurring now, but the potential looming for a major environmental, if you think the molasses was a problem, wait until you learn or hear or see or it develops the amount of oil in the underground that has escaped from degraded pipes and what have you. And I'm going to talk about that in the next hour and share with you. If the Army or the military decides to downsize, we must emphasize and remind them, whatever you do, leave some money so that you can clean up this ecological disaster that is looming and playing out right now as I talk to you. And so This report that I'm going to read is share with you is from Tetra Tech, and it was produced in September 7, 2011. Now, remind you, many things could have developed in between here and there, but there are some things that will catch your eye, and potentially the molasses issue, the spill or the release is, I would say, menini compared to the potential costs. And you may not recall, or some of you may recall, that there was an explosion down there in Evilly in the 90s from a vapor explosion. And why did that occur? Because of the underground fumes and oils and things of that nature. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to take a break here, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half, and just Stefan Grappelli and Somewhere Over the Rainbow with Father Earl Hines. Anyway, a little jazzy there. So before I get into this discussion about the pipelines and all, I'm going to try and post this link up to this letter. And mind you now, this is 2011 letter, but the emphasis is, I thought I'd just share that with you, because if the military does leave or downsize, there are many other impacts. And I'm just really reminded and appalled that we lost a lot of wetland areas and areas for native plants due to the expansion of homes, the building of homes to accommodate the growing population of military men and women that were going to be stationed here. And now to learn that all of that was done and we gave up lots of acreage on Kaneohe Marine Base and Red Hill, many places, to expand and build homes to accommodate. And these areas served as small pockets of wetlands and areas where native plants were still found. And they destroyed a great bit of that to build homes to accommodate and house the military. And now to learn just a short time frame, they are saying now they're going to move. So as far as the financial and the economic impacts, I don't know anything about it. I'm not versed in that subject. But to know that we treated the environmental concerns and as if we heard quite a bit, well, it has to give way to the military needs, to the country's needs for deployment, for building a better response team, and housing these men and women allows for training and what have you. And then all of a sudden to have that thrown out the window, it's kind of painful, to be honest with you. Having heard and written and asked them not to. So I don't know what to say to you. It's a sign of poor thinking. But before they leave, we should in fact make sure that there is money left here to clean up and to address what it is that they have done. And this pipeline, there's a series of pipes under the in the harbor that give you one example. The lines have been repaired several times in the past years by the state and army for the portions installed on their prospective property. But there are questions about the responsibility for maintenance and repair of portions of the pipelines installed in Nimitz. The pipes, they reference them back in the old days, that they don't even believe the quality and the integrity of the pipes were in such a degraded state that even then they were leaking. And it does not make reference to any cleanup or fixture. And in once old pipelines were deteriorated beyond repair. But it does not, in this report, it does not say that they went and repaired them, removed them, or anything. And they all contain oil. And so there is a serious problem with this this entire infrastructure there at Honolulu Harbor. And we have to, I'm distracted here with the little, but we actually have to make sure that the military, whatever it does, and it should be brought up in many of the public meetings and with the governor's office and the health department. What are they going to do? Are they going to make sure that we're not left holding the bag on this? And by the way, speaking of the government, we noticed that if you, some of you have not been informed, William Ilo will not be serving as a chairman of the Land and Natural Resources in the future. He was given the position of deputy director at DHHL. So the question is, we ask, what is David Ige going to do, and how different will he be from Abercrombie? Well, now we start to see, and we can decide for ourselves, what is this going to be? What is the logic? As I've always shared with you, my belief is that you can put Mickey Mouse in the seat as the governor, or Goofy, whoever. It doesn't matter who you put there. It really isn't run by him. It's run by the caucus and the Democrat Party. And I've shared with you many times, this is why we have this corrupt climate. And that is... why didn't Ige hire someone else? And he retained Joby Masagatani, and you've heard my presentations here about Masagatani and what she has presented and how crippling she has been with her and to carry out administratively Abercrombie's practices. So, but in this case, I think I'm going to take a sit back and watch this one unfold, because if SHPDI, the State Historic Preservation Department, was floundering and failing to do its job and still acting as if it's some serpent sneaking in through the grass and depriving Native people of the right to know and protecting the Kapuna Ivi and historical sites and archaeological sites, then why would Ige put Ila in the position, and why would he retain Masagatani to chair that position? What is going on? But I'm going to defer that to the Native people, to the Hawaiian people, and if you say it's okay, then I have no further comment on the DHHL, because if we know that this is what's going on, and there were other people vying for this position in the DHHL chairmanship. So again, we're going to, as time comes, things unfold. We will see, and I don't know why Ida was removed from the chairmanship of DHHL or was not given that again. But again, this is the politics. This is what you're voting for. When you're voting, you think, for the name, the individual, but you're voting for a group of people that control the government here in the state of Hawaii. That's what it's an incestuous group. So that's why I never hang my hat on and pay much attention. Well, if he wins, what's going to happen? I often say, if he wins, then we need to say to him, who do you appoint, where do you appoint them, and what are they going to do? Then we get a chance to see what his policies are, and are they going to really benefit people of this state? So I don't know... if it's the way the game's played, you know, Ila was campaigning. He was appointed by Abercrombie. He was campaigning for Abercrombie. Then I guess when they saw that the light at the end of the tunnel was going dim, hop on the other track and say, well, I'm campaigning for Ige because he's a Democrat. So, again, not chasing Ila around, but he is presenting himself in this public forum. He wants to be in this light. And Joby Masagatani, I still say, to the people, to the Hawaiian people that benefit, or the beneficiaries of the Hawaiian Homeland Agency, until you clean the people out, even right down to the clerks, until you revisit that, all things that are rightfully yours as a native people will be squandered as they've been squandered in the past years. And it's good land, it's free land, and so they can give it to their friends. I'm still waiting for answers from Masakatani on Hawaii, the roads and highway builders, on the illegal dumping and the illegal leases. So, again, let's just take a look and see what's going to happen. But we'll be back, and we'll get back to that oil the contaminations. But I just thought I would mention that. And 524-1080, if you have any comments or want to share your thoughts about anything, we'll be here. We'll be right back. Aloha.
Hallelujah.
half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Sitting here chatting away and beautiful. Just can't wish I could be out there in it, hiking up the Pala there, looking at that trail. But anyway, as promised, I'm going to share with you some information on the... I just thought it would be interesting. I don't know how you could use it, but sometimes knowledge is good, and just to know about a few things. But down at the Honolulu Harbor, there's an ecological disaster playing out right now as I talk to you regarding the contamination and the plumes of oil and diesel and other materials that are just floating in large or lakes, or we'll call them, they call them plumes, but we'll say small lakes or small ponds, generating gases and what have you, and potentially lending themselves to explosive conditions. But this report that I was referencing is September 7, 2011, presented by Tetra Tech to the DOH HERE office, and it was sanctioned by the HERE office. Primary findings identified as a result of the document's review include the following. U.S. Army historically conducted operations at Pier 1, 24 through 6, Pier 35 through 36, and 39 through 40. I was trying, why would they say 39 through 40, but 24 through 26, 25. But these piers, the early 40s, U.S. Army conducted storage and transportation operations at Pier 39 and 40. U.S. Army operated two pipelines running from the former oil company's manufacturing plants near Pier 30 to U.S. Army facilities at 39 and 40. And 39, you know, is right there at where Nichols is. And if you recall, remember there was a delay in opening the buildings down there because of gases on the ground. So, again, having direct impact on what the uses of the state could do and causing delays and financial. I don't know how they got around that, or they venting the gases or what have you. On Pier 39, pipelines reportedly ran from the oil manufacturing plants at Pier 30, then west along the present location of Nimitz Highway, then southwest immediately past the Kapalamas Canal, and terminated at Pier 39-40. Now, down there at Kapalama, and in that area, there is a spill that we talked to you about a while back recently, PCS discovering oil there near Boyne Kihi Lagoon. So it's all over the place, ladies and gentlemen. And will it present itself in an explosion sooner or later? Now, there's been efforts to extract and remove, but not much. Pipelines carry fuel oil, bunker C, and diesel fuel. Multiple extensions of these pipelines, Piers 24 through 26 and 30 and 35, were installed during World War II. Extensions reportedly ran northeast from Piers 24 to 26, 30 and 35, and then connected with the pipelines running along the present location of Nimitz Highway. U.S. Army Transport Service conducted operations at Pier 24, 26 from approximately 1941 to 1945. U.S. Army Transport Service's primary duties were to transport supplies and petroleum products to various military facilities and other war-related industries. At least 11 pipelines, folks, were operated by the U.S. Army Transport Service at Pier 24 through 26. Did they remove them all? Were they leaking? Did they leak? Yes, they did, all of the above. Some pipelines reportedly, other pipelines reportedly ran west-southwest and Piers 24 through 26 to oil manufacturing plants near Pier 30. Pipelines carried oil, diesel fuel, kerosene, gasoline, and aviation gasoline. And just be assured that a great bit of this is now on the ground and just floating on the water, the groundwater on top, and pockets of it. And so at any given time, we may find ourselves with explosions in the Nimitz Highway. So I was thinking, if there are pipelines under the Nimitz Highway, and if there's foot dragging, but what if there was sufficient amount of gases there that are present, and eventually they blow up? What impact would that have on the columns and Nimitz Highway itself? Just thinking. But imagine the impact. So when the military says it's going to downsize and move out, like this, will they clean up? Will they take care of the things that they're... Will there be money allocated? And what about our congressional staff and the senators? Are they actually paying attention to this to bring in the money that is needed? But you stand back and you listen to some of them, the conversation about the military, and they somehow felt that they were, it was acceptable to claim that they are stewards of the land, good stewards of the land. Now, mind you, a lot of the land has been protected by the military's present, because they would just throw a fence around it and prohibit you from going on. But their activities, did it leave the land on the ground? What did it do? And so they're not good stewards, because when the need comes, as we've seen at Kaneohe, we saw wetlands and areas that were dedicated and money spent to preserve them. They were just dismissed. Those efforts were dismissed and in turn built houses. And now they're saying they're going to give up some of those houses because they're going to downsize. U.S. Army Transfer Service primary duties, and at least some pipelines reportedly ran northeast from Piers 24, 26, then connected with the pipelines running along the present location of Nimitz Highway. Other pipelines reportedly ran southwest from Piers 24, 26 to oil manufacturing plants near Pier 30. I wasn't aware, and some of you may be listeners like Ed or whatever, familiar with that time era, that there was oil manufacturing plants at Pier 30. I remember the large containers and the storage bins that they had there, and that some of them were removed. Other pipelines reportedly ran west-southwest from Pier 24 to 28. And pipelines carried fuel oil, again, the same, these pipelines. Review the documents from approximately 1969, repairs and extension of Honolulu Harbor, prepared for the Department of Transportation Harbors Division, clearly confirms the presence of U.S. Army pipelines in the Nimitz Highway corridor, extending from Pier 30 area to Pier 39 and 40. Review of a historic 1945 Territory Hawaii map titled Honolulu Harbor Lines, Piers 2 through 40, clearly illustrates two U.S. Army pipelines extending from Pier 30 to Piers 39 and 40 through the area which is currently the Nimitz Highway Corridor. The two lines present are a 10-inch fuel oil line and a 6-inch diesel fuel line. Please refer to attachments, includes relevant. Property ownership records confirm that Pier 39 were controlled by the federal government between 1941 and 1988, and specifically by the U.S. Army between 1950 and 1988. So this is good information, and is the Attorney General, is the DLNR, is the Department of Health actually building a case and put a case together to make sure that the cleanup is done by the military and not left there? But I suspect that, being given the nature of and the behavior of our congressional staff, how they've been nurturing the relationships with the military here, and which is okay, But don't throw out the baby with the bathwater or whatever you want to use scenario, because welcoming the military here is nice. It brings, they say, to the economy and it contributes. But what they leave may be more costly than what the benefits were. And only we'll know later if these things present themselves, as in Yvelay, that explosion from vapors. And that was passed off as a minor thing. But if you were to go to Yvelay right behind the on the northeast corner, or the northwest corner, let's say, of Best Buy in the back, if you go there, you'll see an actual pump. And that pump is running 24/7, and it's extracting oil from it, from the plume that's underground there. Now, in that instance, they say the reason they're extracting that and running that was that the canning companies had a large storage of fuel, and it leaked, and the lines were corroded. And so it leaks in the ground. But that's the same area Yvelay and those military pipes are under there. So I wonder how much blame is really being placed on the military. So this document goes on to say, history of construction and development in 1957, Honolulu Harbor, Hilo. According to records from June 1914, the Superintendent of Public Works indicate that the U.S. Army operates Pier 1 for the mine planters at this time. Only Pier 1 through 20 exists. Piers 17 through 20, located in the Yvelay District, are operated by the railroad, interferred as the OR, OR, and L. Now, they too have lines. And you don't know this, but underground there, large volumes of material has been freely flowing and over the years. And so they're trying to address that, but there's some shenanigans being pulled that was brought to my attention a while back, and I couldn't locate the notes. I had an interview with someone that was working with the state about this, and they, I thought I could find them this week and get them and present them, but quite interesting. I'm not the alarmist, and I'm not saying there, and you haven't seen much of a problem, but the amount of oil is so substantial that they make reference to this, how substantial the volume and quantity is in some of these reports. Let's see here. Letters from Shell Oil. So if you go by Nimitz and you look to the Shell Oil, say that was part of the complex. And in a case that during the war, the U.S. Army installed a 10-inch fuel line, pipeline during the war years to serve Piers 39 through 40. This pipeline was connected to the pumping systems of four oil companies. Evidence that the pipeline was leaking indicated that the fact that the significant quantities of oil were required to pressure the line before each bunker job. So they've identified each area that leaked to the best of their ability and the volume that they show. So step back and let's look at this oil there down at Nimitz and the piers and in the Honolulu Harbor. And then let's just take a little jaunt up to Red Hill and why the harbor oil issue has escaped us all and really haven't been. It's been published a little bit, but not in greater detail. And look how the military is handling the oil at Red Hill. So, we have a serious problem, and it's unfolding, as I say, right before our little eyes, And if they do downsize, who pays for this cleanup? And who pays for the water issues, the contaminated water? And I don't know how much of an impact, or even if there is one, on the water that is being extracted. If I don't know the sources of water for the areas downtown, or if any of them draw from these areas. And maybe hopefully I can find some records and share with you. But this is a bit scary. And when you have plumes of this material, and eventually, does it make its way to the ocean? Does it make its the way to the harbor? And imagine that. Imagine it gets so bad eventually that the surface of the ocean within the harbor will be burning or contaminating the boats. And what kind of cost would that be? The Honolulu Advertiser article, in 1941, U.S. condemns Kapalama land for Army Pier. Article indicates that 661.83 acres of land located to the west of Kapalama Canal is being targeted for acquisition by the federal government. So I'm sharing this with you in case the military says, well, no, that's not true. I just thought I would share with you. And by the way, if some of you are doing research, if there's some students out there or you looking for, this document is a memorandum document review for references to U.S. Army pipelines and operations, Nimitz Highway Corridor, Iwelei District, Honolulu. It was done by Tetra Tech for the State of Hawaii Hazard Evaluation and Emergency Response Office in 2011, September 7th. May not sound important now, but I was looking at this and I'm thinking and going on some of the things I've been told here recently. There's reasons to be concerned. You know that the emergency response fund for the amount of oil sold, there's so much money given to the state, hazardous and emergency response team. And of that, very little now is given to the health department. And a great bit of it is given to DCC, to the DBET and other, and being given to others. But if this money is available and they're running out, they're saying they potentially will lose 42 positions if they're not funded properly or adequately. And, of course, does that mean that a new tax? No, there's no need for a new tax. It just simply means that the state should, instead of giving it to DBED, the money should be given to the response team, and some of the money goes to general fund per barrel. But with the cost of oil now, as it's going down, will they sell more oil? Will there be more money available to be given away to the agency? But imagine 41 positions being lost, or 42. There's another document says 42. But what do you do? And with this Nimitz thing, folks, and the harbor with the oil, the also mentions possibility of installing connection valves and manholes so that the branch lines could be connected to serve Pier 35 and 36. So, and one of the culprits in this is the United States Army Corps of Engineer. The Army Corps of Engineer was working on a project for construction of new pipelines within oil companies and the government because existing government pipelines are, listen to this now, the reason they're working on these pipelines is that because existing government pipelines are beyond repair. They were servicing, these pipelines were active, and they were beyond repair while being used, and they needed to be replaced. And there were some instances where the Army Corps of Engineers asked, where are these pipes located? And something to the effect that they weren't denied. And yet the state and its researchers had to, its contractor had to go back and piece together these documents. United States Army Corps of Engineers wants to know if it is necessary to include connections at Pier 35 in the plans for the new Pier 39, because old ones already exist, new ones will exist. There's a letter, a 1955 letter from an unidentifiable sender to Hawaii Commissioner on Public Lands, letter asking for review and approval of the plans, licensed federal government on few pipelines and Nimitz Highway between Shell Oil property and Pier 39. This is an effort to identify these pipelines, and what I'm trying to say is, building up, is that it's so fragmented as to the ownership and so sketchy as to who owns what, and it hadn't been nailed down. So the question is, who pays for it? We know that the military had control of these, and these documents show that. But now, who is going to, amongst Schatz, Hirano, Takai, or the others, who is going to go in there and say, or Gabbard, and say to them, we need you, each agency, the Army, Air Force, Marine, whoever it is that owns these, and the Army Corps of Engineers, to identify these and quantify it and know exactly how much money it will cost. Or better yet, that the federal government set aside a fund to make sure that as these things unfold and present themselves, the problems, that we in turn be able to tap into a fund that is drawing interest that would pay for these things. And I think it is going to be, we're going to catch hell if we're not properly funded, because to extract this oil and remove it, and then to mention the impact. Now, imagine these things getting to be really bad and start to leak and present themselves in a worse way. Imagine, there goes Waikiki. There goes the tourist land for some while because of the impact on the oil, and not to mention the resources. So there was a letter from Standard Oil to U.S. Army, which letter indicates that the U.S. Army 10-inch pipeline at the Shell plant in Eveleigh was leaking and thus unusable until repairs are completed. Standard Oil proposes installing a new pipeline from their location to oil plants to provide same functionality as a damaged U.S. pipeline, U.S. Army pipeline. This new pipeline would be approximately 40 feet in length, and ownership would be vested in federal government and maintained by Standard Oil. U.S. Army Shell cut and tap broken pipeline to prevent further leakage. For those of you who don't care, no problem, I understand that. But for those of you who would like to know, this is the kind of activities that went on and goes on. And I know we got to fight a war, and I know we have to protect our country and, you know, and propagate freedom. But the cost of doing it and the contamination, and we talk about protecting the coral and the ecosystem and all of that, and you have this occurring, and you don't hear much about it. And in fact, they have meetings, and they don't want this information going out to the public. I believe there should be a public announcement or a meeting or a presentation informing the public how things are progressing, who's refusing, who's not owning up, and what agencies. There's a memo in 1994, August, a memo from United States Army Corps of Engineers. Notifies the United States Army Corps commander that no further action recommendation was made by USACE, Hawaii District. This document confirms historic use of piers by 2426. So this document is laying out the ownership, but who is going to, amongst us, is going to say to the military, the evidence is here, it's clear that your pipes were leaking, here's the evidence, here are the letters, here are the documentation. What are you going to do to provide us financial support or take full responsibility, and before you leave or if you decide to stay, clean up your mess. So the this notifies Army Corps of Engineers. This is 1989 October, a letter from here office, that the U.S. government is a party responsible for contamination in the Evil Eight District and asks for their voluntary participation in the cleanup process. You see, this is the state health department is asking for their voluntary. Why would the state health department have to ask a responsible party who has accepted responsibility to clean up something that we know is detrimental to the health of the of humans, to the environment, and just not good, right? Why would they have to ask the military to conduct, to voluntarily? Why not file a legal action if you find that you have to ask them at all? So in 1989 November response, United States Army Corps of Engineers, this provides your office with appropriate info on the district point to contact regarding environmental concerns. So they're talking about it. And the 1997, going back a bit, letter from here office, Army Garrison, Hawaii, Director of Public Works for Petroleum Contaminated Area. This notice requests relevant hazardous substance release information from the U.S. Army Garrison. So what I'm trying to get at in reading this, it's kind of back and forth, is that why would the state have to ask the feds for anything as it relates to known leaks, known large volumes of oil on the ground and potentially just looming to contaminate everything and present a problem? Why would the state have to ask it? Wouldn't you think that this information would be shared without having to ask for it if, in fact, the military had in mind, or the federal government had in mind, that it would own up to its responsibilities of doing this? Then the state says they asked for previous documents related to releases, including independent documents or documents obtained by research performed by U.S. Army, its attorneys, consultants, and agents or employees. And then the state says that it's required to participate by state law, must provide any previously undisclosed information related to this matter. The U.S. Army Garrison has opportunity to participate in Evil Eight Technical Working Group. And the letter of 1987 June, the Garrison wrote, the Army Garrison wrote, this indicates that the U.S. Army could not find any records to spills and are releases of hazardous substance at Pier 26. U.S. Army previously owned 10-inch fuel line, a 6-inch diesel fuel line that ran from the company's plants in Evil Eight near Pier 30, then along Nimitz Highway and terminated at Pier 39. Quote, our real estate records show that the Army did one time own a 10-inch fuel line and a 6-inch diesel line running from the oil companies storage facilities in Evil Eight along Nimitz Highway to Pier 39 and 40. These piers were once owned by the Army. Why is the state having to chase these guys down for information that should be readily made available, but apparently they claim they couldn't find any records? So how do we resolve this? How do we take care of this? You know, it's an interesting situation. Contaminate the Red Hill. You got contamination found in the area of the stadium. You have now, they're admitting that plumes of material of oil is moving from the area of the Red Hill tanks. You have materials that are contaminating the Mililani area and through there coming from Wheeler and Schofield Barracks in that area. So what should we be placed on some special fund by the federal government? Should we? Because we don't really know the impact of this long-term impact should we be in line for federal money set aside? And mind you now, I know some of you will equate this to welfare. And then I'm saying that's exactly what it is about. It's about the welfare of the people. It's about the welfare of this fragile environment. It's about that welfare, not the EDB card. So, and this thing is going to play itself out soon. I don't believe that oil can sit in the ground where it's not naturally found and just lay dormant and without finding its way to the surface, finding its way to our drinking waters, to our streams, rendering this place to be foul and contaminated and uninviting to anyone to want to come here. Why would anyone want to come here? So I think we still have an opportunity to grab hold of this, and I know this doesn't sound, I'm not presenting it to you in a fancy way, but I'm trying to reconstruct with the best I can to share with you that there is something really, really wrong. So in 2000, August, the United States Army Corps examined their local records for potential FUDs, formerly used defense site actions in Evil A, and reports that only former DOD sites in this area are piers 24 through 26. See, even though they show records of many piers being used, and they say they gave a whole list of piers that were installed and built by the military and had pipes, yet their records now, they're playing dumb. They don't have anything. An inventory project from 1984 indicated that NFA was warranted based on no further action, current condition of the three piers. No other environmental investigation, no sampling was conducted by the Army Corps of Engineers. How about that? So if they don't sample and they don't take samples and tests for it, then they could always claim, we don't know of anything. Letter indicates that the DOH and EPA are considering conducting a time-critical removal action for the subsurface plume in the Evil A area. I don't know the status of it. Maybe they extracted it all, but if you, again, go back of Best Buy on the northwestern part corner, you will see in there, there's that little shopping center where the Eagle Cafe is right there. There's a huge pump, and if you look to the left or the right, depending on in the little canal there, you will see some milky water, and that water is being generated. It's discolored because they say the air, the oxygen that is being sucked up and then discharged as a process of removing this plume of fuel. A vapor, and then again, at least 11 pipelines were installed and operated at Pier 24 through 26 in the 40s. So that shows the military owns it, but the Army Corps of Engineers says it can't find any records. Then a vapor explosion occurred at Pier 26 in early 1990s. DOD involvement is necessary because the remnant pipelines play a key role in the overall Honolulu Harbor's cleanup project. And that is, if you want to follow this and understand some more of it, there's this project, the Honolulu Harbor's cleanup, and it's massive in that sense, but again, it's only touching portions of it. And what part is the military owning up and putting money into it? The U.S. Army Navy piers, Pier 24, the War Department leased 24 through 26 for the Army Transport Services, and in April 1941 and at least to 1945. These piers were very busy during the war, according to ISN annual reports. 11 petroleum product pipelines located at Pier 24, 26, based on info from the 1950 United States Army report on pollution in Honolulu Harbor. So they have some information, but the Army Corps, I don't know, I will describe it as foot dragging. One of the duties of the U.S. Army Transport Service was to transport supplies, including petroleum products, to various military posts and war-related industries. During hearings at the as part of the 1950 United States Army investigation on pollution in the harbor, it was reported that the oil companies were unable to make normal checks and repairs on the pipeline, to the pipelines, because the Army Corps Army was in full control of the terminal. Past releases were significant. So you can't get the records. You ask for the records. They don't give them to you. Then you say, on one hand, we didn't have any pipelines there, and it's back and forth. And so I don't know if this is going to continue to be under kept quiet, and they're going to work at it slowly, but I still believe that eventually it's going to be one of the biggest issues in Honolulu. If you think the rail issue, because once this stuff make its way to the water, the surface of the water, and not become just a sheen, and then we see more vapor explosions, I think it's going to get someone's attention then, but will it be too late before someone end up dying or getting injured? And I think the Honolulu Harbor itself probably is destined, if the rate the foot dragging is occurring, will become a bona fide cesspool. Coral and anything else would probably not be living there. If this thing finally presents itself, all of this oil and contaminants that are under the ground there. Reports include a map showing pipelines traveling from oil company facilities in Iwale to Pier 39 through 40. Quality is poor, but two pipelines can be clearly observed to be running along Nimitz to Pier 39 40. Upon a review of full-size September 1945 map titled Honolulu Harbor, the two pipelines are clearly labeled. And a documented release from 1955 indicates that the United States Army Corps of Engineers is working on a construction project for new pipelines extending between the oil company's facilities in Iwale to the government piers. Old pipelines are deteriorated beyond repair. No details or whether the old pipelines were removed or abandoned in place. So if they were abandoned in place, that means there's oil in them, and to get certain pumpage, you have to have them with pressure and fill. So that means the length times the diameter and will speak of the volume of oil, but if they've been leaking for a while, for years, then where is that oil at now? And then not to mention the naphthalene, the TPHs, and all of that associated with these gases and the fuel oils. In 1969, there's a document. There are several direct references to U.S. Army pipelines. And it goes on to say that additionally, the refueling at Pier 39 and 40 can be made by four oil companies through a 10-inch pipeline, diesel and line installed at Nimitz Highway. The lines have been repaired several times in the past years by the state and the Army for portions installed on their prospective properties. But there's a question about the responsibility for maintenance and repair of portions of the pipelines installed at Nimitz Highway. This document confirms presence of the U.S. Army pipelines in Nimitz Corridor extending from Pier 30 to 39. This is what's happening and laying down there, and it's a report that, if you want to see it, I'll post it at carolcox.com. Well, I'll give you a link that you can go to. Be happy to do that. But anyway, that's what does that mean to you? And was it understandable? I don't know, but if one of you, just one of you that is interested in knowing, there is potentially a big problem looming. And so I thought I'd just share that with this talk about, and the mayor saying that we should keep the military here and what have you. And I don't know. I'm a type of person, I call myself a common senser, And will the military just keep people here because the mayor and others wanted to help the economy, or will the military do what is necessary to respond to people attacking America? That means, shouldn't the military be allowed to stage its people or house its people wherever it feels that it is militarily wise, rather than base people at certain place because of financial benefit to the city? Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Hey, you know, listen, I would want the military to leave. Of course, they should be cleaning up after themselves. But actually, I think there is a possible housing deal here for people that can't afford housing, and and maybe we can have some hope that. However, I'm not even sure if they'll let that go, right? I mean, they'll just say, well, this is housing on military property, and we can't allow it, and then we might need it back sometime. Or I wonder how that's going to work. Do you have any idea how they would, if it would go back to the state of Hawaii? Or?
Well, thanks for asking that. Well, first of all, let me just start off by saying we had Iroquois Point, right? And we saw that it's in the hands of a private entity, like Forest City, you know, and then there's Hunt. And my concerns is that that while our senators and all go away, and they're going to have say in this, and if the houses do become available, this is why I kind of my senses went off and my radar went off when I learned, was told that Schatz is... Senator Schatz's wife is working for one of those people that would companies that would be in fact in line to receive some of this property to manage.
Oh boy!
So you know you see that's if it's true that I think it was said that his wife was working for Forest City or one of. If I'm wrong, please call and correct me. But that is a first sign that.
Yeah.
If they're these homes, and you know, and first of all, if they got all these nice homes in Aliamano or Red Hill, Ahuimano, what will happen with these houses? Right? They built them, and now they're going to vacate them. They going to give $300,000, $400,000 to to the IHS, to a home, to... bring in the homeless and house, you know. I don't know. I it should be. I mean, it should be created a program where to make, but they'll probably call it affordable homes.
No, we know about affordable.
It's an interesting point. But see, I see the fly in the ointment already that. I just think that if Schatz Pipe is actually working for those companies, that company should be not allowed.
Well, yeah, of course.
Be participating in it. But but they don't give you something for nothing, these companies.
Oh.
You understand. And I know, pardon me?
You know, this last year, there has only been 15 house, units of I guess most of the apartments, affordable.
Yeah.
This was last year. And there was like 15,000 at least that are needed in affordable range a year and for stable future. And that's the pathetic way, that, I mean, 68 units.
Well, you know, I thought, well, but then I thought the great, you just, you must be doing drug, Carol Cox, because this will never happen. You know, like HUD seeing this, HUD be, should be out there advocating for getting those homes and turning them into a whatever. I mean, it's a reality. Again, though, you know, you're going to have the people sitting around going, well, we can't create a welfare state. Yeah, but the whole government is welfare.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is like the government can't manage. It has homes, right?
And it
has a housing department, right?
Right.
So
why
didn't the state take this land and convert it into and manage it under that program, right?
Yeah,
because this was friends making money for big friends.
Yeah. Well, then Barber's Point, yeah. I mean,
Iroquois Point and Barber's Point and you know, so.
That was where I remember. What was it 1998 when we got Barber's Point back?
Mm-hmm.
Naval Station, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Military housing there. It was in fair condition, pretty good condition, and also they had housing. There was hundreds of acres that could do ultra lower income housing, and look at this is 15 years later, and still nothing. A development for I take that back. They did have a little they call that transitional housing for the vets, and that's about all that's happened.
But let me ask you a question, being that you are on top of this, the new governor retain Colin Kiffin?
From what I understand, he's still there. He's in his office for now, I guess, until they...
So that's Ige's housing answer to
the... Coronary, homeless coronary, actually, is the title. $97,000 guy that does nothing but talk.
I'm telling you, man, every Democrat in this town should burn his card and call himself a nobody and a nothing, because that's what we mean to the party. Watch out for the Republicans. Watch out for the Republicans. A Republican alert, or Republican has been seen in the neighborhood, and then come trust us. Leave all your nest egg with us, and then it's squandered. Right? This is the Democratic Party.
Yeah, because, we remember... Patsy Meek and other very progressive liberals that we used to have here, and that now other Democrats invest into the.
I think we're going to see a change. You know that, Dave. I
hope so.
No, it's
he's going to have a test, he's going to have to prove that he's not part of that big party.
Well, he is part of that, but the thing is that we just like we sent Neil Abercrombie that message, and it wasn't just a message to Neil. It was a message to the Democrats. You have taken us for granted too damn long. It's over. That was just a start. Abercrombie was just the beginning, right? And I believe if the Republicans or the Independents put someone that's viable and committing, quit talking about people's sex life and all that, we'd see a change tomorrow. I really believe it. If they could keep God out of government with the Bible, let people believe what they want to believe, pray to who they want to pray to, and respect the constitutional rights of others, and stay away from the bedrooms of people, I think the Independents... The Republicans will take it hands down, because we know what this Democrat is.
It's tough. I'm always beginning to like Republicans. In this state.
Well, what do you get? Reality is reality. You get lied to once, you get lied to twice, and then you go, come on, bro, let's do it again. No.
That's the problem. You have a one-party monopoly.
It's not a monopoly. The people, there's this thousands of people that vote. There's no such thing as a political monopoly.
Yeah.
It's a political lethargy.
The lack of participation by
Well, we're down to the last second, so thank you.
You take care, and thank you very much so much for speaking out. I always like to say Martin Luther King.
All righty, we're going to be talking more, and
okay.
we're going to be talking about a little Sambo here soon.
Really.
It's all relevant.
I like what you were talking about there too, because I have memories of that too. And anyway, the hottest place in hell is reserved for those that don't speak out. That's what Martin Luther King told us.
All righty, Okay, well, thank you, and then we'll see you folks next week.
Aloha. Yeah, okay.
Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday, at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.